Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show from the Green Thing Socalo Village Studio. It is Monday, June 22nd, 2020. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun. Bill's taking some time off this week, has a few of us sitting in for him, and I am up to bat first. I always enjoy doing that for my friend Bill Buckmaster, who I call the hardest working journalist in Arizona media. I love what Bill said on his Facebook page the other day. He announced that his 2021 calendar had arrived and that, quote, we're midway through this awful year, and isn't that the truth? Check out Bill's Facebook page this week. He and Ann are posting some vacation adventures there. One was particularly cruel when he pointed out that it was 64 degrees at their spot in Northern California. He sent me an email today, and he's got some more stuff up there for us to look at, the giant redwoods, and just a gorgeous spot up there in Northern California. The show comes to you live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 p.m., where you can catch the live stream or access all the archives at buckmastershow.com. We start off the week talking to our political experts during the Monday political face-off. Lots going on. Today we are going to welcome John Munger and Jeff Rogers. And after the break at 12:30, we're going to be talking to documentary filmmaker Frances Causey, who lives in Tubac, and will talk to us about her film, The Long Shadow, which deals with race issues. I'm very much looking forward to that. Please join us. If you have a question or comment, you can reach us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. The Monday Political Face-Off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, hanging services, and systems. I've seen a lot of their work, and it's as good as it gets. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com, and you can find them on Facebook. We are joined by commentators John Munger, Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, and Jeff Rogers, also a Tucson attorney and former head of the Pima County Democratic Party. John and Jeff, hope you guys had a great weekend.
Great weekend. How are you doing?
It's hot out.
Good weekend. Awfully hot. I got my electric bill this weekend, and it said my average high temperature last month was 4 degrees hotter than a year ago, and my average low temperature was 4 degrees hotter than a year ago. So it was a hot June, or it still is.
Yes, and we were talking to the Weather Service recently, and it's going to be a hot summer. Just hate to tell you that. But, you know, right in the middle of it come the monsoon, and we're really glad for that. So we'll hope for that to happen real soon. John, I'm going to start out here with you. President Trump was back on the campaign trail over the weekend after nearly 4 months away. He did not attract a very big crowd in Tulsa. Does that say anything, or was that kind of a media much ado about nothing situation?
Oh, it's much ado about nothing with this coronavirus outbreak. I'm not surprised that more than 6,000 people didn't show up, but you know, Joe Biden would never come close to 6,000 people. Of course, he's got himself locked up and refuses to come out and make any. He hasn't had a press conference for 82 days. Biden has it, and he's hiding. Trump's out trying to talk to people. Over 4 million people listened to it on the television, at least 4 million. And so he's getting his Trump's getting his message across. There was a lot of excitement in the room, and it's nothing. He's going to continue to do these rallies. He was energized by it, by all reports.
Sure, and we should point out that he is going to be in Phoenix tomorrow for a rally, and you know, he did say a lot of things, and some of them raised eyebrows. I'm going to throw one quote at you and want you to tell me what you think about this. The exact quote is about coronavirus testing. You know, testing is a double-edged sword. Here's the bad part. When you do testing to that extent, you're going to find more people, you're going to find more cases. So I said to my people, slow the testing down, please.
Now, he was joking.
Come on, John.
He said things like that multiple times before.
You know what? I know that a lot of people say we just don't get his humor, so I made a point of looking up, watching that quote, not just reading it, and I'm not so sure he was joking.
Did you watch what he was saying? Did you watch the context of it as opposed to the quote?
Absolutely, I did.
Okay, well, and so I took it he was joking, and the testing has not slowed down. There's more testing going on in this country than any other country. And that's people get their panties all in a bunch about something Trump says when he's joking. That's his form of humor.
I know, but in a public health crisis, maybe that's not the right time for it.
Oh, give me a break, Dan.
Jeff, am I overreacting here?
Well, I watched it as well. As hard as it is to watch his performances, I watched it, and I didn't take it as joking, and we didn't hear anything about anybody joking about it until the very next day when various members of the Trump administration tried to say he was joking about it. He wasn't joking about it. He meant every word of it, and I do think that the rally was reflective of declining support. I don't want to read too much into it because of the coronavirus, but you know, of course, you know, a lot of the Trumpsters believe it's a hoax to begin with. So why didn't they show up? But he had a bad week. I don't think this president's ever had a week as bad as last week. You first lead off with the LGBT decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. You then have the DACA decision for upholding the rights of the deferred action for childhood arrivals. You then have Bolton's revelations coming out in his book, excerpts of it published on the air and interviews about it. Then you have him losing the court case trying to block the book in an attempt at prior restraint. Then you have the virus surging in over a dozen states, including Arizona. And then his polling has tanked in the last month. I mean, ending with a poll you cited in an email you sent to John and I, this Ipsos Reuters polls has him down 48-35. That's a 13-point which that poll has always showed Biden ahead, but it's never been that kind of. And now we even have the polling average from Real Clear Politics has him down 50-39. So he's in the tank. And I think what we're seeing now and what we're going to see for the next 4.5 months is people are exhausted. People are just, it's not just partisans like me who really hate Trump. It's people who don't necessarily hate him are exhausted and tired of his demeaning and dehumanizing people. And, you know, I mean, now he's coming out defending Confederate monuments. That would be like Angela Merkel basically saying, well, we need to have some Nazi monuments in Berlin because, you know, after all, that's part of our heritage and part of our history. Well, these people were losers. They lost the war and they were traitors. And, you know, the fact that he's out there defending these monuments is getting pretty embarrassing. We've reached a pivotal moment in American history where I think these things have to come down, and they are coming down. And cooler heads are prevailing, and yet he's still out there defending the Confederacy. So I think the country is turning against Trump.
He's not defending
by large margins right now. And I think he sees the writing on the wall and is becoming more and more desperate.
He's not defending the Confederacy. He's defending our history. You know, they're not just tearing down Confederate monuments. They're tearing down George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, U.S. Grant. You know, these people are nuts, and they're trying to cancel our history. I can see the argument, that argument, particular argument, both ways. Any reasonable person can see it both ways. The Democrats talk about how hateful Trump is. Look how hateful the Democrats are. They have. Jeff just said he hates him.
Oh, he's the worst president in our history.
Well,
I'm not shy about saying that.
Well,
I disagreed with George Bush. And
well,
I
let me finish,
with Ronald
Jeff.
Reagan,
let me.
But I didn't hate those.
Let
men.
Me
they
finish,
were,
Jeff.
They were genuine Americans.
I let you finish. So here's the problem. They hate him so much that they will say and do anything and have. What we've ended up with is a cancel culture on the left, where they want to cancel anything that is American history, anything that's American values, they want to cancel it. Frankly, they're fascists. They want to censor people. They censor by intimidation. They want to defund the police. They want to do crazy things. These are crazy, crazy people. Now, you may not have a sense of humor about Trump saying that he told his people to slow down the testing. But the frank fact of the matter is He doesn't control the testing. The testing's being done at the individual states. Everybody that is at all non-hateful looked at that, listened to that, and said, you know, he was joking about how much better this is getting and how much testing is going on. The more testing that goes on, the less lethal this coronavirus will end up being. So it's in his interest to have more testing. He's always said he wanted more testing. He's been the one that's got the testing going in the first place. Nobody can argue about that. And these people are so hateful that they've turned fascistic about it. And they want to cancel and censor and intimidate everybody else.
Well, other than Brazil, we've had the worst performance of any country in the world in attacking this virus. And Trump is embarrassed by that and humiliated by that. And his polling numbers for handling that are even worse than his regular approval numbers. So, you know, the fact is, this is something that embarrasses him and humiliates him and is a sore spot for him, just like the economy is going to be from this day through the election.
I see.
When we come back,
deep trouble.
When we come back, John, I'm going to have you address the polls, whether it's even too early to be listening to these. We are with Jeff Rogers, John Munger on the Monday Political Face-Off. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village studio. We'll be right back.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill. You've joined us in the middle of the Monday Political Face-Off with Jeff Rogers and John Munger. And John, I said I would kick it back to you, and we're talking about polls. And Jeff was mentioning a lot of polls that are not going in favor of the president. Is it too early to really be paying attention to these, and do the results concern you?
Well, number one, it is too early. Last year, out this far, Trump was behind by 13 points at the same time and won the election. Number two, the polls that are being taken, if you look at their methodology, they're over-polling both Democrats and blacks. They are not polling likely voters. They're polling registered voters. And they're oversampling blacks and Democrats in their methodology. So, of course, the numbers are going to be skewed against Trump. That's what they always do. So I'm not worried about it. You know, we'll see how the campaign evolves. Once Joe Biden comes out of his bunker, he seems very afraid to come out of his bunker. I think his people have got him locked in the bunker and won't let him come out, because every time he does, he proves he's senile. He says something crazy. And the question is whether the American public is going to vote for somebody who doesn't want to talk to him. He'll eventually have to come out, but he's got real problems. And I'm confident that it'll be a close election, but I don't think it'll be by any means 13 points. It'll be neck and neck.
Okay, we're going to go to the Buckmaster Show live line. We have someone with a comment on monuments. Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Dan Scheer, good man. Hey, I want you to educate Mr. Rogers. Evidently, he's forgetting that the party of the Confederacy was the party of the Democrats. And Mr. Dan Scheer, I wish you would write an article on these Confederate monuments. And speaking of monuments, there's a monument downtown. Mr. Rogers, Pancho Villa invaded the United States, killed 19 Americans in Mexico. And I want you to, what do you think about Pancho Villa downtown? You know, and then KKK Beard from West Virginia, Senator, he's now deceased. But there must be probably 100, 200 post offices, roads, highways, buildings. Let's West Virginia.
Well, Bird was the head of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah. Okay. A good point. Okay. We're going to let Jeff.
Democrat.
We're going to let Jeff take this. Okay. What about that Pancho Villa statue?
Yeah, I've never been fond of that Pancho Villa statue.
Isn't it an odd
never
thing?
Never made sense to me at all. It must predate my 41 years here, because I don't remember putting it up. But you're right. The Democrat Party was prior to the 1960s was the sort of party of the Confederacy in a way. And you know, the Civil Rights Act pushed by John Kennedy and passed by Lyndon Johnson sort of eliminated that awful stain on the Democrats, and now the Republicans seem proud to have accepted that new stain. But the fact is that we really do need to not honor people who attacked America, people who were traitors, who tried to dissolve this nation. We shouldn't be honoring them at all in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion. But yeah, you do have a few good points there, sir.
So let me add a few points to this gentleman's comments. The Democrats, the Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in greater numbers than did the Democrats, even though they didn't have greater numbers overall. And the Democrats actually filibustered the Civil Rights Act in the Senate. The Democrats didn't want the Civil Rights Act to pass. And what you got to recognize is that every one of these Confederate statutes that's being taken down, were all Democrats. It was the Democrat Party that was for slavery. It was the Democrat Party that evolved into the Confederacy. The Democrats that even in the northern states fought Lincoln tooth and nail on all of his efforts. It took the Republicans to get the 13th Amendment passed and all of those different amendments. This is shame on the Democratic Party. Even Pelosi is taking down four portraits of former speakers of the House who were Democrats did not support the black movement, and in some cases were slave owners. So I think the Democratic Party has shame written all over it. They're a bunch of hypocrites.
They used to have shame written all over it. Now the Republicans have assumed that shame, and they're proud of it.
You're wrong about that.
This is not your grandfather or father's Republican Party. This is not the party of Lincoln anymore.
Oh, yes, it's the party of Lincoln. Sure. It's the party. Yeah.
Not with this president.
Trump who put through the First Step program for prison reform. It wasn't the Democrats. Barack Obama didn't do that. Barack Obama didn't solve any of these racial problems that we have today. Barack Obama didn't do anything about any of this.
He didn't foment racial problems like Trump has done.
Oh, yes, he did. He fomented racial problems by taking positions in legal cases.
He didn't take positions trying to foment hate and
violence.
Okay,
gentlemen, we're going to head back to the phones. We got another comment, I think, on the same topic. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Well, I was going to suggest that the Republican Party put a different two people up for election, McSally and Rand Paul.
Okay.
I'm dead serious.
Quite a combo.
Because, very interesting, isn't it?
It's good for the country.
Yeah. Now, as far as our current president, thank goodness that Bolton had the courage to do and say what he did. I can recall a president of maybe 100 years ago who was sick in bed and not making any decisions, and the country didn't know about it. Mr. Trump is not well. It's good that it's been exposed, and Republicans would do the country a favor by putting up two different candidates.
Let me ask this.
I just made my suggestion.
Let me ask this lady a question. What did Bolton say, ma'am?
That Donald Trump is totally incompetent.
Okay, he said that he's incompetent. This is a guy that was fired. What else did Bolton say besides that?
He said he was unfit to be president.
No, I'm asking
this lady.
I didn't take notes.
Anybody that says anything negative about
Donald Trump is a wonderful
he
hero.
He also said
as far
he tried to sell out to China to help his election possibilities.
Two people who were in on that conversation said, who heard that conversation said, it never happened. John Bolton is the guy who refused to testify under oath. So he didn't testify under oath. He reserved it to write a book about it. He can't testify under oath because what he's saying in his book is perjury. It would have been perjury if he'd done it under oath. And if you want to talk about corruption in the Ukraine, you need to look no farther than Joe Biden and his son, who earned hundreds of thousands of dollars off the Ukraine. And Joe Biden's son has been paid by the Chinese $1.5 billion. By the Chinese.
Jeff, I want to break in here. I want to get one question in before the end of our time. We're talking about Joe Biden. He still has not announced his vice presidential candidate, and I know that you are not concerned. You don't think it's too late that he has been delaying or anything, but do you think he kind of painted himself into a corner when he decided to restrict his decision to a woman?
I do. And I know what he was doing was by saying that, you know, we have plenty of women who are competent to be president of the United States, and I respect that. But he did paint himself into a bit of a corner here, and I think he's probably now in a position where his best candidate is Elizabeth Warren, but that puts that seat in Massachusetts in jeopardy. So if we end up with a 50-50 tie and win the presidency, that seat could be handed over to a Republican for at least 120 days.
Well, he promised not only a woman, but a woman of color.
No, he didn't promise a woman of color. He just said a woman.
Of course, Pocahontas claims that she's a woman of color.
Yeah, so I think that that his probably top two candidates are Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris.
Okay, we'll see. Okay, that is going to wrap it up for the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery, Fine Framing, meeting all your custom frame needs and more since 1985. That's Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. My thanks to Jeff and John. Always interesting. We could have taken this one a whole hour without a doubt, but hope you guys have a great week.
Always can, Ken.
Thank you much. Okay. When we return to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolow Village Studio, we're going to be joined by documentary filmmaker Francis Causey. You are not going to want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for Bill, who's enjoying a wonderful vacation in much cooler country with his wife, Ann. You know who'd like to see you? Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. There is much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, even now, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing, and visiting for the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of many things to do, great places to stay, visit Southwest New Mexico. www.pimaanimalcarecenter.org. I am with Frances Causey. Welcome, Frances.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Oh, great to have you. Frances, you live in Tubac, at least part-time.
Right.
And before
full-time, actually.
Okay, good. Yep. And before heading down to Southern Arizona, you worked for CNN for 15 years. You now make documentary films. But tell us, what did you do for CNN?
I was a national desk assignment editor and also a field producer, both in Atlanta and New York.
Okay, and then you started making documentaries, and in 2002, the History Channel picked up your film, The Wendell Scott Story. It was the first African-American stock car racer. That had to be thrilling.
It was. I spent 4 years of my life getting to know all those bootleggers and moonshiners with NASCAR and got to know more about Mr. Scott's life as well as some of the other ones, and they truly are the greatest generation.
Oh, I tell you, it had to be thrilling, and then to get it picked up by the History Channel and on from there. Your latest work is The Long Shadow. When did it come out? And give us a synopsis. And I've seen it a couple of times, and so I'm going to jump in too.
Great. So it was released in 2017 at the Mill Valley Film Festival, and we started working on it, Dan, in 2014. So we've been kind of on these current events that have kind of come to a head for some time now. And so the film came out. PBS picked it up. It ran during Black History Month this past February, and because of current events, PBS is again picked up the film, and it's airing all across the country.
You got a big event tonight.
Yeah, I'm participating with Maryland Public Television in a Twitter town hall. The hashtag is Standing Against Racism. The film will be shown statewide in Maryland, so that's a really cool event we're excited to be a part of.
So your family owned slaves. Was that news to you?
It wasn't. Like a lot of people growing up in the South, I mean, a lot of folks owned maybe one, two, three, four slaves. But we had this rather famous statesman in our family. And as I began to look into wanting to do the film, you know, I discovered this history around Edmund Pendleton, who essentially Thomas Jefferson asked him to take the colonial law, the American colonial law, and make slavery part of the new United States law after the Revolution. And so he was a judge, and he was Washington's personal attorney. I discovered that he played a very important role in making sure slavery survived the Revolution.
And was this news to your family to hear this too? And how did they respond to it? Probably not having dug as deeply as you have.
Yeah, they were actually quite supportive. They didn't know, but I'm such a nerd. You know, I spend most of my time in a book, and when they really didn't learn about it until I came out with the movie. It ruffled a few feathers for sure, because they had grown up the way I did with all these myths surrounding the Southern role in Civil War and some of the rosier perspectives. And so bringing a more truthful account, I think, you know, it kind of made them sit up and take notice. But in the end, they were very supportive of me.
You told me a white person had to make this film. And I know some people blanch at the thought of white people trying to tell black history, but why was it important that a white person tell this story?
Well, I think this white person needed to tell it because of the history. And as a journalist, I'd always wanted to tell a more truthful account. I kind of made Dan the film that I could not find. And so as I got more into it, and this, you know, this term white privilege certainly evokes a lot of feelings and passion on both sides of the issue, right? But what I found was that we really had never had a national reckoning dating all the way back to our founding of the degree to which we institutionalized slavery, and then also institutionalized kind of white power and white privilege, if you will. And so there are just tons of examples of that. It's hard sometimes to convince people that you have all this generation upon generation of legalized discrimination and how that's impacted the African American community when it comes to education, employment, and housing. So I say things in the movie like we look at the failure, you know, I mean, finally African-Americans were starting to participate in 1968 with the Fair Housing. But by that point, a lot of the gains made off of World War II in housing were simply not available to them. And that generational wealth transfer that happened in white families like mine never took place in black families. So that's one thing, right? But let's look today more currently as more current concrete example of white privilege, right? The Paycheck Protection Program. Now, historically, African Americans have been shut out of conventional borrowing. The statistics all support this, right? So, as a lot of people know, with PPP, if you were an established banking customer, whether it be Bank of America or Hughes or whatever, you from what I've read, have preferential kind of treatment. They know you, you're a regular customer. Well, I think, for instance, black-owned businesses, which we're now knowing, are not taking as much advantage of PPP as they should, because they're failing. We know they're failing and they qualify for PPP. One can only think that relationship or lack of a relationship between community lenders and the African-American community is really, to some degree, favoring white folks and disfavoring African-Americans. So they're generation historical examples, too many to talk about here, but also current examples.
Is that an example of systemic racism? Because people are wrestling with what that term means, and white privilege, which is an off-putting term until you really think about what it means. Right. Define white privilege in a way that isn't going to turn people off.
Sure. Well, I think the best way to define it is to, at this point, because the conversation is getting, you know, we're getting somewhere with it. So sure. I think citing these examples is really important. But simply put, I mean, white privilege is, you know, a system that was created by white people for white people based on the perceptions, beliefs, and cultural norms of white folks. Right. And so you just go back to our founding, right? When in the early 1600s, when the country, was still a colony and just being colonized, you had black and white indentured that came to these shores. Eventually, local state laws kind of enslaved the black indentured while white folks were allowed to go free. And so So what you see is throughout history, Dan, you see this imposition of anti-black racism in the system. Now, we outlawed all of this with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But as you and I know, perceptions, customs, norms, things that people grew up with in their family, if those ideas and perceptions aren't challenged and it's swept under the carpet, which I believe we've swept it under the carpet for 400 years, you get to the point we are now where you see COVID impacting the African-American community. You see this disproportionate police brutality against African-Americans. And so what happens is, I mean, how much more can the African-American community take? And I think you're starting to see that pressure cooker. And I think there's some real change happening.
And I want to get into that after the break, but would this be an accurate reflection then of or definition of white privilege? Is that, frankly, it's just easier in the United States to be a white person than it is to be a black person?
I think that's a fair account.
Okay, so we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolow Village studio with our guest documentary filmmaker, Francis Causey. We'll be right back.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are talking to filmmaker Frances Causey and her film, The Long Shadow. And we have, it's had a resurgence in interest. Came out in 2017, but what's happened in the last few months has really kind of put you back in the fore. And again, it was a rerun earlier this year during Black History Month, and there's a lot of interest going on. How are people taking it right now? Is it still just as relevant?
Yeah, I mean, it's gauging by the interest in the movie. PBS picked it up again. You can go to our website at thelongshadowfilm.com and click on the left toolbar PBS, and you can find out which PBS stations are airing the film again, as well as reach out to us. But yeah, we're starting to work with corporations that are approaching us, Dan, about helping with their diversity efforts. And I always say to them, you know, if I'm an activist, I'm an accidental activist. What I really am is a journalist who told this particularly relevant story.
It is a relevant story, but it's a hard one for certain people to hear. And we were talking off air that, you know what, let's be frank here. A lot of people who should watch this are not going to watch it. Right. How do you get people to engage in with this type of a film? How do you do it?
Well, I think if you can get... First off, it's hard enough to get somebody to watch a 15-minute film, much less a 75-minute film. So, sure. If I can get folks to watch the movie, then we can have a serious discussion about what needs to change. And so, we have had people that have been kind of unconscious about where they were coming from, and they're open and willing to watch the movie. And I would be more than happy to put it to any, you know, truly, really, really conservative organization that wants to debate me on that. Rush Limbaugh, if you're out there listening, sure, to Dan, you know, watch my movie and let's talk about it. Let's roll our sleeves up and have a serious conversation about it.
But what they're going to say is that there can be no serious conversation as long as there's rioting and looting in the
right.
streets.
Yeah.
I
agree. I mean, I've had a couple of people reach out to me about, you know, do you condone violence? Of course I don't condone violence, right? But I do believe in our peaceful ability to assemble and make our voices heard. I mean, I think it's been fairly well proven that, you know, extreme on the left and right have kind of been agitating things. I mean, the bringing down the statues, yeah, let's have a community debate about that, and then let's pull those statues out and put them in a museum, and let's discuss them and who those people were and what they did.
Well, it's interesting what you say about the left and the right agitating, and it's true because we allow them to frame the issue for us and decide what we should be talking about. And I've always said most of us are in the middle, and right, right now we want to know what are the right questions to ask and what are the answer. So right now we have officer-involved violence. We've seen that. Calls to defund the police department, Confederate statues ripped down, which you've mentioned, even NASCAR banning the Confederate flag. Mm-hmm. Is this the beginning of real change, or are we going to kind of get past this right, and forget about it?
Well, I hope not, Dan. I mean, I hope not. I mean, I think, as I said to you, I was so delighted when my bank sent me an email last week saying they were closing down for the second half of the afternoon to celebrate Juneteenth, right? Right? And so I think what you're saying and what we need to get to is this: the issue that we're facing is an American problem. It's not just an African-American problem, that the burden of which needs to be borne by the Black community. We as a country need to get behind, say, for instance, Representative Barbara Lee wants to do a South Africa-style Truth and Reconciliation Commission and put the issues that are in my film, put them in the national spotlight. Let's roll up our sleeves, talk about it, pros or cons. I'll be happy to go to Congress and testify, and let's really study it, not on social media, not, you know, but let's have a serious look at the issues. Now, of course, the pressure is going to come from the ground up, as all great change does in our country, right? So, you know, we've got to keep pressure on the politicians to keep it in the forefront. But I am starting to see, like, for instance, when you start to see corporations, you know, not only donating money, but changing policies, then you might be getting somewhere. You really might be getting somewhere.
But we're really not going to get anywhere until people are willing to be honest with themselves. And I think that was the best part of your film, is that now you have to personalize it. And I was talking to an African-American friend years and years and years ago, and I came to the conclusion that I walk into a store and never once have I ever thought a shopkeeper was looking over my shoulder because they thought I might be stealing something. This happens to them all the time. Now, I don't know if that's an example of white privilege, but it is something that I don't have to worry about. I don't have that pressure, that stress, or anything like that. And I had to be honest with myself and say, that is an advantage for me.
Right.
To not have to go and undergo that.
Well, it is. So if you can imagine at the incidental level, I mean, what when something like that happens, what happens on a over generation upon generation? I mean, just 3 months ago, I was standing outside the Walgreens at Speedway, and there was a very nice looking African-American man, very well dressed, you know, standing outside the kind of offset to the right from the opening of the Walgreens. And this white woman, I saw her come up, an older white woman, just got this look of panic in her eyes. And she asked, she was going out to her car, and she said, "Will you follow me to my car?" She was terrified by the look in her eye that this Black man was going to do something to her. Now, where does that come from? That comes from generation upon generation of scapegoating, diminishing, and profiling through media images. I mean, these are all the things. This was the inspiration for me to really make the film, because I grew up with, as you saw in the film, The Lost Cause, and glorifying the Civil War and these monuments and all these things. And all I could see were apartheid-like conditions for African Americans living in the South.
Well, can a film change things?
Well, I know this, you know, it's one viewer at a time. And I think that's the best of documentary film. By their nature, they are kind of activists. They want to overturn the status quo, things like that. But, you know, this one little film is impacting people who watch it, each and every person who watches it.
The film is accurate and honest, like I said, and I really appreciate
Thank
that
you.
Because a lot of films come from a standpoint that they're part of the agitation, quite
yeah.
honestly, and
yeah.
they are instantly written off, and they are applauded by those who agree with it and never watched by those who don't.
Right.
This is something everybody should watch. And again, just prepare to be honest.
Yeah.
Let me make a statement here, and because as I was thinking through your film, this kind of occurred to me. The divisions in this country shouldn't necessarily be drawn along racial lines, but rather whether people are rich or poor. It seems like that the rich and the poor seem to be these groups that are more obvious in America than maybe the groupings along racial lines.
Right.
And so it seems like the poor, whether they're black, white, or Hispanic, whatever, have got a bigger beef than maybe along racial lines.
Right. Well, unfortunately, I think even as the original founding fathers kind of, or, you know, the original elite of the country, it's like, you know, poor whites got this message that no matter how, you know, how awful your circumstances are, you would be above blacks in our society, right? And so you raise an interesting issue, because I really want to get the film in front of real working class white folk, right? Because they're the ones who say, well, white privilege, what's my white privilege?
Absolutely.
Right? And
yes.
I totally get that.
Yes.
And it is the inequality in distribution of income over the last 40 or 50 years has really made it be almost, you know, the fittest survive. And I think what you get is you get scapegoating of people that are perceived as less than you, right? And I think that's happening on a national level. And so there's a great book called, if you want to read it, called Dog Whistle Politics by Ian Haney Lopez. And it's about politics, but it's really about the issue that you're talking about. So it's a hard sell to white, you know, people, more lower middle class white folks, but you still have an advantage in our society if the color of your skin is white.
Right. And that is a tough sell for people, because I don't feel privileged,
right.
But if you're honest with yourself and you can see other people's experiences, you get it. We are talking to Frances Causey and we're talking about her film, The Long Shadow, and you can find out more at thelongshadowfilm.com.
Right.
I want to throw one more thing at you, because this comes up every once in a while and really, you know, ticks people off. We got about a minute left.
Sure.
Curveball, reparations for African Americans in the United States. Is this kind of getting too far afield and we shouldn't even be dealing with this? Or
no, let me give you an example. Like, let's take education is based on property taxes. Obviously, wealthier white neighborhoods are going to have more resources than a resource-rich poor or resource-poor district or school district. Let's purposefully try and put some of those resources into those areas and help refurbish. Let it be a black-led community decision, and let white allies come in and support changes like that. You call it whatever you want, refurbishment or reparations.
Okay. Time's way too short, but our thanks to Frances Causey. It has been great talking to you. Give us your website one more time.
Longshadowfilm.com, and I hope you'll join us on Twitter tonight, Maryland Pub TV. Hashtag is Standing Against Racism. 6 o'clock tonight, our time in Tucson.
Very good. And I will be back in this seat on Friday as we talk to... we're going to be talking to Don Weaver, who's Green Valley Council. And we're going to talk about the future of Green Valley. What is it? So Bill's got a few of us sitting in for him during his vacation. And we will hope to see you then. He's got a few of us sitting in this week. And Bill, enjoy your vacation, as always, deserved.